Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Are these same people part of the, I understand you said they've killed off most of the Mer of Binnigan line, but the Carolingian line are basically now the nobility and the royalty?
There's no doubt about that. I mean, even today, they go into these genealogies, and sometimes you'll find that this odd thing happens when they pick, for instance, a lieutenant general or governor for Canada who speaks on behalf of the Queen, the Queen's representative in her dominions, which is up in Canada and Australia, New Zealand, and so on. When you go into their coat of arms, like the last one it was in, it was actually, they had symbols there from the Merovingians family tree. I thought that was rather interesting. So you'll see it in symbology. You understand, these characters will give you more in symbology than they will ever in the written word. And that's how they can put things right in plain sight. And most folk don't understand, because they can't come out and just admit what they're up to or what they've been up to all this time. And if you go back into Pythagoras, for instance, and even Plato, these guys all were trained in ancient Egypt. Ancient Egypt, in the mystery religions, it was only one stopping place. Because we find in Herodotus, he talks about it. We find, again, Plato too talks about it. You went for initiation in Egypt, and then you went to India in ancient times, for a higher or more education in the mystery religions. And then you went to the Levant, as it called, that area of Jerusalem and so on. And then you came back. But what Egypt exported mainly was revolution in other countries which they did not already control. That's an interesting concept. And Pythagoras himself, when he went back to open up his school after being in Egypt and being taught, his school was burned down when the people realized that he was trying to get the young students to turn against the parents and the old society, to destroy the old society. And they even taught, they brought in females too, and they had to marry them off, try to marry them off to noble people, noble families, and start to influence the decision-making policies and politics and so on. When that was found out, they turned against him. And that time, he went to Crotona to open his school. It was a part of Italy at the time. That was a Greek empire. And they burned it down. And the same thing happened eventually with other philosophers from the same school who were all taught in Egypt. You all know about drinking off the hemlock for Socrates, for instance. And Socrates, too, was also blamed for trying to corrupt the youth. What it was again, same technique. He would also teach the young females in education, basically how to seduce the nobility, get them in, get them married, influence policy, and also how to overthrow the ruling establishment of his time. And then when you follow it up into the Neoplatonic movement that broke out in about AD 300 in Alexandria, it was the same thing. Fascinating writings came out at that time, about AD 300, of the same group, a continuation of the same group, where philosophy was to be the main religion, and philosophy would rule through academia and eventually through revolution, always turning the young against parents through millennia, if need be, to bring in a world where they themselves, the best suited, the wise men, if you like, would rule the world, because the public were just too stupid to do it themselves. And they also believed in a form of evolution long before Darwin, because it was closely linked. The philosophies were closely linked, as I say, with not only Egypt, but that also of India. And if you look into Hinduism, there's not much difference in their understanding of evolution. From slime and so on into insects and creatures, then people. There's not much difference between that and Darwin, so there's a definite connection.
I've got Richard in Alabama. Are you there, Richard?
Hi. I want to ask you a question about the way John McCain shakes hands and signs autographs. He always holds his elbows up high. Is that a Masonic symbol or something?
The Masonic symbol you'll see every day on television. You'll see them. It's hand to hand. They step in with the right foot, that's toe-to-toe, knee-to-knee, they hug each other, the hand goes, left hand goes to the elbow, then to the back, and they whisper in each other's ear. You see it all the time between all these top people across the planet. Yeah, if you see them, the politicians meet, and I saw that even during the Soviet era, it was quite funny to watch, where presidents would meet the presidents from the Soviets and so on, and you see arch-enemies meeting other arch-enemies, supposedly, and you see them facing each other, they give the right handshake, the left arm goes to the elbow, the right foot goes into the right foot to touch foots, and then it's knee-to-knee, the left hand moves from the elbow off the other guy, and it goes to his back, and it's cheek to cheek, and then they whisper something in each other's ear. That's your common. That's your, it's your 5 points, they call it the five. That's the low meaning of the lower 5 points of masonry. There's higher ones as well, but that's a low-level one. But you see it all the time as they go through the routine for the public.
But the elbows up is not a Masonic symbol.
It depends. If he's holding his forearm across his chest, generally they use a sort of 45 type degree, sometimes a 90 degree.
Well, I just know McCain does all his autographs with his elbows up.
Uh-huh.
And he does his handshakes with his elbows held high.
Mm-hmm. It could be, but I don't know. Generally you'll see them too. They often make the square with their foot. They call it the square, where they splay their feet to create again a 45 to 90 degree angle.
Hmm.
There's lots of different signs they use, including verbal signs.
Hmm.
Yeah. But they'll all be Masons for sure at that level. I mean, you know, you can take that for granted. Yeah. Okay. So that's what happens. We have systems within systems and brotherhoods within brotherhoods. And you can't really get up the top. It's well known that even at the bottom, if you want to get ahead in society, you join one of the lodges, because you get up the ladder, as they say, in finance and success. You also cut petty bureaucracy. That's what they're known to the public. You can bypass a lot of the petty paperwork and get things done very quickly. If you're in a good lodge, you can go to the bank manager and get a loan the same day. It's all approved and it'll be in your hands before the bank shuts. There's lots of little perks they get too, tax breaks and various other things too, if they say all the right things to the guy that comes and assesses their home.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get to the top without belonging to one of these particular organizations. And same with the females too, the side lodges, they call them. They don't get into the higher secrets, although they think they do. That's well explained by Mackay in his Encyclopedia of Freemasonry and others. But everyone that's anyone on any board in your area or town or whatever, male or female, will belong to the local lodge.
Hmm. Does the Prince Lodge have any real power?
Yeah. You're talking about the Prince Hall Lodge.
Yeah.
Yeah, Albert Pike authorized the startup of it. And it does have power. Again, it's to remember, it's an elitist organization that pulls men out of the masses. So even though they think you're following someone who looks like you and appears like you, he believes himself he is superior, and that's why he's been pulled out of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
They give you your leaders. All peoples have them. They have them in China too, and Japan.
From myself, Alan Watt, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.